This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, a fantasy author publishing under JMD Reed. My first series collection is out. That's right, the first three books of The Storm Below are gathered in one convenient bundle. When Ari and Shailene are drafted into the Autonomy's Navy, their love is stressed to the breaking. Assassins, dark gods, and demonic storm riders threaten all they hold dear. You can get the entire Storm Below series in two collections, book 1 through 3 in the first, and books 4 through 5 in the second. Today, I'm joined by William David Ellis. He's the author of the epic fantasy series collection, The Harry Ferguson Chronicles, books 1 through 3.
How are you doing today, David?
I'm well, James. How are you, sir?
Doing good. I'm doing good. I see you're back for round 2 on my podcast.
Yes, I am. You're a very popular man.
You are my first returning guest, so it's great to have you. Yeah. I've only been doing this for 6 months, so.
Okay.
All right. So, as you know, I always like to start these out with a fun question or two. So, what time of day do you like to write?
Oh, that's a good question. Probably from about 9 o'clock to noon, and then I take a break. And this is on our day when I'm really in the groove. And then maybe from 12:30 to about 2:30.
Okay. And what is your favorite season?
Favorite season? That depends on the day, because bad weather in any season. I don't like cold and wet. Gloomy in any other day, but that's fine.
What part of Texas are you in?
East Texas, around Tyler, Texas.
Okay. Yeah, you can get the really humid stuff there, can't you?
Oh, yes, indeed we can.
Yeah. Because I used to live in New Mexico, so I know the west half of the state, and it's not humid.
No, it's not. Dry heat, but it's still
hot. I'm up in Washington State.
So okay.
It rains a lot, but it's not a lot of rain. So a place like New York City gets more rain in a year, but that's because they get those massive nor'easters that just dump a ton of rain on it at once. Whereas we just get a steady drizzle of almost 3 or 4 days a week. It's almost always overcast in the winter, and 3 or 4 days a week there'll be some amount of precipitation, but it can vary. But then again, there's the Olympic Peninsula, where there's a rainforest, and that gets way more rain than any other part of the United States. But that's because there's coastal mountains. So I'm in the rain shadow of the Olympic Mountains. But most days it's just dreary. It's dreary. Yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
It's like Scandinavia, but not as cold.
We need to come to Texas.
Last time I was in Texas, it was in Dallas, and it was really humid at 3 in the morning.
Talking about the city. I mean, there's a difference between a city and Texas.
Well, that's because I was, got stuck at the airport, and I had to spend the night.
I'm sorry.
Oh, it's fine. It was, rainstorms or whatever. Anyways, let's talk about your book. You just got a box set out, right? The Harry Ferguson Chronicles box set?
Yep. Did that a couple months ago.
Okay. Why don't you tell us a bit about Harry Ferguson and the princess who forgot she was beautiful, and just catch up the listeners on what makes this such a great series to read.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's a wonderful series to write. And if you don't enjoy what you're writing, chances are nobody's going to want to enjoy reading it either.
Very true.
Recently, I had a major surgery, and my wife says when I was under anesthesia, I was talking to my characters. So that's either, I'm close to the edge, going crazy, or I'm really in tune with what I'm writing. And I really think that if you're not that involved and that you aren't feeling the lives of these people that you write about, how is anybody else going to do that? And people want something to feel when they're reading. They want something to capture their heart and their mind. And my characters, obviously, have done that to me. But you asked me to talk a little bit about the story. It's a braided story, kind of like Princess Bride. You remember where the grandfather is telling his son a story, and So you're watching two stories, the grandfather and son's interaction, and then you're also seeing the story as it unfolds with the actual Princess Bride and the pirates and all that. Well, that's kind of like the, how the princess who forgot she was beautiful starts out. Starts out with a library scene in the summer and where all the little kids are gathered and their moms are thinking, oh my goodness, I get an hour to go do something for myself. And they drop them all off at the library. And the librarian has coerced her father into coming in there and telling a story. And he doesn't want to be there. And but the kids grow on him. And he learns to love them. And they get involved in the story's telling. And the story's telling is a true story. It's the only story he knows because he's lived it. You see, he's a time traveler. And he didn't set out to be a time traveler. It's just that when he tried to rescue a princess in the 12th century, he was a peasant boy. And all of the knights had been destroyed by this dragon. And he knew the countryside and knew the swamps. And he was able to sneak up on it and slay her. And in so doing, he discovered a lot of things that could help him. And but he also got hurt. And he wound up in a literal stream in the cave that was a time stream. And it cast him out in all places, East Texas, in the 20th century. And he grew to be an old man there. And so now he is... telling a story to a bunch of little kids. And what he discovers is that he wasn't the only one that got caught up in the time stream. And there's a little girl, 6 years old, who was transformed. You know, he came in out as a 17-year-old boy, just like he went in. But she came out as a 2-year-old and was adopted by a local couple. And now she's 6, but she doesn't remember who she is. And so the old man, who originally set out to rescue her, is now telling the story to the 6-year-old, and the 6-year-old begins to remember, and it scares her because she still has the mentality of a 6-year-old, and yet she starts to remember parts of the story that he never told anyone. So that's how the princess who forgot she was beautiful gets started, and it just goes on from there because there was a third entity that got caught up in the time stream, and it was the dragon himself, and that and he takes on he's a shifter. So he takes on the persona and the physical characteristics of a local clergyman. And this guy's diabolical, man. He is satanic. And the old man figures out who he is. And, you know, they're going toe-to-toe. And that's really the princess who forgot she was beautiful. And in the process, little girl is marked by the villain, the dragon, and she becomes a shifter too, a dragon shifter, but she doesn't know it. She doesn't know how to use that gift. She just knows that in a final battle, when the old man is dressed in his armor and he's fighting this dragon, he looks like he's about to die, that she suddenly explodes into a dragon, and she comes down on the villain. And I don't need to go any further because that will totally ruin the whole first story.
Yeah.
That's story number one.
All right. So why did you release a box set?
Because the people whose advice that I heed said, hey, you need to release this box set before you release the other two books in the series so that it'll get out there and people want to buy the next two. And so that's what I did. And
okay.
Number 4 should come out January. Number 5 sometime maybe March. It's really hard to close these things out because you don't want to go say goodbye to your characters. You know, you got caught up in this. And
it can be hard.
Yeah. So you've done it.
Yes. My Storm Below series is complete. I don't have any intention of revisiting those characters. Whereas my other fantasy series is part of like a sort of more shared universe. So I have plans. So while I have like 2 finished series in that universe, I have plans to continue those character stories in other books and other adventures, because there are individual stories, and there's like the more meta story that's going through the entire series about like there's something really wrong with the world, and they're kind of dealing with little like pieces of fallout or and stuff like that, whereas no one's yet to address the real issue, and so
takes a while then.
Yeah. So that's that kind of idea behind the series. But yeah, I know it's hard. Especially because it was my first series, and I really like those characters. And I wrote it for a couple of years, so it's something I was always being worked on for years. Yeah. Anyway, so besides your Harry Ferguson Chronicles, you also have some books about Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, and that was fascinating. I've always been a Sherlock Holmes fan. I read him from the time I was a small boy. And, you know, just and then you see him in movies and in old television stories. And I thought, I wonder if I could write a Sherlock Holmes story. And I played around with it, and I did. And some of my friends said, oh, my goodness, this is good. He said, you've caught the voice. You've really got his character. And I thought, really? And I said, yeah. And I said, well, I've only got one story. They said, well, write some more. So I added to it. And the first is more like a novella. It's only 100 pages. And it's out there. And it got a lot of attention. But, you know, I thought, especially without promotion. And it's about to be free, however, on the 25th of this month. I'm going to make it free for 5 days and a special promotion. And I'm expecting several thousand downloads or uploads, how you say that.
Yeah, I think the podcast is going to be out after that's done. Though,
so. Say that again?
I think this podcast will be up after that, sadly, because Thanksgiving is going to, I think, disrupt our publishing schedule.
Sure.
And as we're recording this, the 25th is only 2 days away. And, yeah, like, I think if my schedule stays on track, this is not supposed to come out until a week from tomorrow, so that's like what, the 30th? Yeah, that's the 1st of December. So
okay,
sadly, perfect. Your free deal is going to be done.
Yeah, they're gonna miss it.
Yeah, sorry readers.
Shake, they can always buy the book.
That's right, it's still going to be there for you to read.
That is exactly right. And Sherlock Holmes has so many people writing because he's public domain now that it's been fascinating to see how many different ways he can be portrayed. And so I've got my own little world, the characters, you know, Dr. Watson and Mycroft and even the regulars, Baker Street regulars, the little boys that he uses as scouts, and Miss Hudson. But I've added a few, and because this is like a paranormal series as well. And I use some public domain folks like the Frankenstein monster, who 150 years after he was created, has become a very civilized individual, you know, and he's got a lot of manners. You know, he doesn't have bolts growing out of his head. He's not all scarred.
I don't think he actually ever had bolts growing out of his head in the original Mary Shelley version.
That's right.
I think that was like the old, Paramount?
Yeah. Sure. So it's been fun to write him as well. And what I've discovered about writing those kind of books is that when in a whodunit, which is basically what they are, you have to figure out how you're going to twist it. You know, how do you, when you're writing a mystery or a whodunit, you start with the end result and go backwards. And, you know, how do you get to this place? And that's fun. You know, it's reverse engineering of story. This is where I want it to end. Now, how do I get here? And it's a lot of fun to play with it and to work through the different angles. And I'm always afraid somebody's going to figure it out before I get to it, because I always figure out the stories. I always know what's going to happen. And I'm thinking, man, if people like myself read this book, they're not going
to
be.
I think when it comes to twists, like if it's an honest twist, it has to be something that the audience has a chance of figuring out ahead of time.
Uh-huh.
Maybe even if it's only a small percentage. I know, like I read The Wheel of Time, and this is a 13-book series. Book 12, there's a twist that was set up all the way back in book 4, and like when the twist happened, I was so obvious that I can't believe that I didn't figure it out. I was all into the theory boards. I saw no theories about this whatsoever. Like the entire fan base had overlooked what was staring at us in the face. And it was a great twist because it was an honest one. Like the clue was there. We just, none of us asked the right question.
So when you say honest.
Honest is that, so there's a twist that is impossible to see coming. Like if you go to rewatch something or reread something, there's no way to guess it. It just comes out of left field.
All right.
And that is not an honest twist, in my opinion. That's the author going gotcha, you know?
Okay.
Whereas like, I think in a whodunit mystery, you should have all the clues in there that will, you know, at the end when you do the grand reveal and you go, this is what everything meant and how it all fit together. And, you know, and you hit it all with like clever red herrings and, you know, false leads and stuff. Right. And, you know, obviously, so you don't want to make it easy, but it should all be there in a text so that So maybe a clever reader might have figured out, but then anyone else could go back and reread it and see it. Like The Sixth Sense, right? You've seen The Sixth Sense? That's an honest twist. You go back and watch that again, and you see all the clues that all the stuff that clues you in that he's a ghost the entire time. It's just you didn't think about it in the right way. But that's it's all there. Tonight. Yeah, but I think that's kind of what you got to do for, at least that's for my opinion, what you got to do for an honest twist, something that will be satisfying to the readers in the long run.
Good stuff. Good idea. So what else is on your mind?
On my mind? So, why don't you just give us a little tease about what the actual story is about for the Sherlock Holmes? Not like, you said there involves Frankenstein monster, but is there like any more of a tease you can give about it?
Sure, I can. Traditionally, in traditional Sherlock Holmes canon, he is extremely skeptical of anything to do with the paranormal. Like in The Hound of Baskerville, when everybody thinks it's a ghost dog, he doesn't believe that. And there are other places, like in The Devil's Footprint or whatever the name of that short story was by Arthur Conan Doyle. He never believed it. It was a demon. Well, I don't know who it was who first opened the door to the paranormal and supernatural with Sherlock Holmes. It wasn't me. But I took it from there, and I have him being awakened, like, oh, my gosh. Now, in the original, I think it's in the original canon, Sherlock Holmes' grandfather was a bishop or some kind of a pastor. And so he does have some basis in religion, in Christianity. And so it's not like he's entirely clueless. Well, go ahead.
Well, I think anyone who was educated in the 1800s England would have grounding on, you know, Christian theology, just as a matter of how their education reflected them.
Right, like, right.
Whether or not he believed it, obviously. But.
Well, he doesn't at first.
Yeah.
And because he's tracking the Ripper, and he has come to the conclusion that it's not just a single individual, but he's having a hard time pinning it down. And another detective who was also a historical detective, not a fiction detective, but this guy was real. He was a Frenchman, and I think he was one of the first people to measure the size of a person's ear and between their eyes and things like that. He was amazing, and his ability to bring forensic science. Bertillon was his name, and I think that's the way you say it.
Yeah, and I think I've heard of him. Yeah.
He convinces Holmes to meet with a Jesuit, and the Jesuit opens a door into the heavenly realms for just an instant, and Holmes experiences the glory, and it just baffles him. It transforms him, and he realizes there's so much more to heaven and earth than he's ever dreamt of. And it's not like he's had a major Christian conversion, but it's like, oh my gosh, the world just opens up. And the truth of the matter is he's dealing with a dark entity in the first story. And that's how I began the journey of Sherlock Holmes into the supernatural. And one of the things they do is the Jesuits grab up all these people who are capable of dealing. They're exorcists. And they have them start at different points in London. And they walk toward the center of London. And they're driving. They're driving the dark before them. And because, you know, wherever they put their foot, they're going to own it. These aren't your regular Joes. These are people who can deal with the demonic. And they drive this darkness into a park. And all of a sudden, there's a twirl of light and thunder. And suddenly, there's a man, an older guy in a black bowler with a white beard. And he's very well dressed. He has a cane. Excuse me. And he's sitting there and he says, I hope you're impressed with yourselves. And then he says, you know, you may have driven me from this field, but I own you. And he goes on with speech like that. And, you know, but he has to leave for a season until he's invited back, which will probably be the day after. And so Sherlock Holmes has solved that first mystery. And that's not the whole story. That's just the first of three or four stories in that first book. And he gets bored within a week or two. And he has an opium addiction, and according to the original canon, he did.
Yeah.
And so he goes before the mirror. He's standing in front of the mirror. He's got a syringe in his hand, and all of a sudden he looks in the mirror, and the old man is laughing at him from the mirror.
Gotcha. So this book's out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe last time we talked, you were like writing it, or you hadn't had to publish it. So that's cool.
Yeah.
So do you what else? So you got the next two books of the Harry Ferguson Chronicles coming out this year, and you got more of the Holmes stuff coming out. Anything else in the works?
Well, Holmes is out now. The second book is out now. It's called The Long Game.
Okay.
It brings in more characters. And then the fourth book in the Harry Ferguson Chronicles is finished. The cover's in process. And it should be out, maybe middle of December? I don't know.
Okay,
maybe
cool.
End, sometime like that.
Cool.
And the fifth book I'm 20,000 words into. And that's one where it's going to be hard. Because I don't know if I want to close out that series or not. We just have to see.
Awesome. Well, it was really great talking with you, David. Oh, before you go, can you tell the listeners where they can find you on the internet?
Well, William David Ellis Author is my webpage. And William David Ellis Author Facebook is my Facebook page.
Awesome.
Yeah, just William David Ellis, you know, author, and it'll either bring you to Facebook or the website.
Awesome. Well, it was really great talking with you, David.
Yes, sir, James.
All right, you have a good one.
You too, buddy. Thank you.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.